This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne here in Los Angeles.
And I'm Steve Inskeep in Baghdad. Some commuters in this city roll past a billboard showing the red fireball of a car bomb. The billboard says terrorists in this city killed hundreds of people last year, a figure that is, if anything, far too low. If Iraqis eventually find protection from this violence, much of it will have to come from the police. So this week on Morning Edition, we've been reporting on Iraqi cops, like the man who kissed an American soldier on the cheek.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good.
The policeman is Colonel Assam Mohammed Azadeen, and the soldier he kissed first was a woman. He went right on to kiss the armed men who accompanied her.
Hey!
And then he kissed a visiting reporter.
Good morning.
Colonel Assam wears the blue shirt and black shoulder boards of the Iraqi police. There is, by the way, a bit of stubble on his cheek. He's the police logistics officer for Western Baghdad, and his windowless office is stuffed with 14 crates of Kalashnikov rifles. Americans supplied the guns, and he listens to their advice on how to keep track of the ammunition.
He say, it's under control. Anything you ask me.
The American advisors are part of a long struggle to build up the Iraqi police, which we'll describe this morning. For much of the past 3 years, the American advisors included Steve Castile, a former federal drug agent who worked at Iraq's Ministry of Interior.
They're the police. I mean, they're the border police, they're the immigration, they're the customs. They're our Justice Department and Homeland Security combined. And if you're going to build a republic over there, you don't build that with a strong military, you build it with a strong police force, people that have daily contact with the public.
The U.S. lost a lot of time in improving that critical ministry. That's the view of Jerry Burke, a former Boston cop and one of the first police advisors in Iraq. In 2003, he joined a team that calculated the number of foreign police advisors necessary to rebuild Iraq's police.
We recommended 6,000.
Well, how many did you get?
Well, the first year, maybe 100 to 125 American advisors in country. I think we got up near 900, never went over 900 during the entire 3 years of the mission. We would talk about, you know, when the rest of the advisors get here, and we'd start talking about what some of our hopes and plans were. And after a couple of months, we sort of started saying, well, if they get here. And by the time I was leaving, we had sort of changed to, this is what you can do for yourself.
It was difficult to find enough police to do the work. And Steve Castile says it was hard to protect the police who did arrive.
My first 3 days in Baghdad, I'll tell you what my first 3 days were. I get off a plane from Spain. I pull up to my hotel, and they rocket my hotel. So I never got checked in. Second day, they blew up five of my police stations by 10 o'clock in the morning. So I'm walking around bomb scenes. The third day, I'm doing my books, and I'm missing $72 million, which I found, by the way, but it took about 10 days. That was my first 3 days in Baghdad.
Castile says the U.S. tried to fight the insurgency by handing weapons to almost anybody and calling them police.
When I first got there, the metric I was being judged on was purely numbers. We want to see X number of police on the street by X period of time. If you've got X number of 1,000 trained and we still got problems, let's just double that number, triple that number, or whatever.
Did that end up actually setting you back because you ended up with incompetent people or people that you'd have to replace or wash out?
I ended up having to try to rebuild that police force, I think, three times.
And though police training has improved, it's still hard to be sure who's on the payroll. Just last week, the U.S. Army circulated information about a police commander using official vehicles for insurgent attacks. Former advisor Jerry Burke says in the last year, militia members also infiltrated police units.
They were recruited en masse. I know I saw one order signed by the minister authorizing 1,300 people to be hired from Najaf into a commando unit within the special police.
1,300 people from the religious capital of Shiite Muslims hired all at once into a single unit.
Yeah, and into the special police. And those are the ones I suspect are the former militias.
Militias have always been the dead moose on the table.
Steve Castile was advising Iraq's interior minister in 2005 as men in police uniforms were accused of kidnapping and killing. It was a disappointment to U.S. officials who had made a plan to employ militia members productively.
And because it was such an involved and costly plan, done, by the way, with limited Iraqi input, that once the government stood up, they never bought into the plan. So nothing was ever done on it.
Iraq's interior minister denies that he allowed militia members into the police, and we will hear his views tomorrow. His ministry is also criticized for corruption. Radi Hamza al-Radi, Iraq's top corruption investigator, says recruits even have to pay bribes to get into police academies.
They're investigating that right now, and quite few of those cases are at the court.
Why would anyone pay a bribe to have a chance for one of the most dangerous jobs in Iraq?
He doesn't have a job. He got to feed his family, so he pay to get the job. Or himself is corrupted. He knows about the system. He wants to get into it so he can start receiving bribe himself.
You can see the challenge that Iraqi police face today if you visit a station's operations center. At the headquarters in Kark, a section of Baghdad, Lieutenant Ahmed Jawad has a sheet of paper listing the previous day's murders in his area.
15, 17.
17 killed? 18? Is this a normal day? What?
That's good.
It's a good day?
Good.
18 dead is a good day?
Good. Yeah.
Police may not have to look far to find suspects. A former general and his bodyguards in this district were just arrested on charges of kidnapping and murder. It's under that kind of pressure that the United States is trying to improve the police. U.S. Army General Joseph Peterson insists that Iraqis are still dedicated to that task.
The most incredible story I can tell you, if you have the time,
sure,
is a story about recruiting in Ramadi. In the middle of the recruiting event, a suicide vest bomber walked into the crowd, killed 60 to 70 Iraqis and injured much more. When we completed the evacuation of the wounded and the dead, 100 more Iraqis signed in. That's commitment.
Hundreds of civilian and military advisors now work daily with Iraqi police units. Friendly police commanders are trying to weed out people linked to militias. A battalion commander was fired just last week. Notorious commando units are being rebranded. General Peterson says they have new uniforms and new names. A unit called the Wolf Brigade is now the Freedom Brigade.
Its makeup has changed significantly and will change much more over the next several months.
Has the personnel of those units changed enough that you're confident that they won't stay in the image of the new names and the new uniforms that you've given them?
I don't know. Hope's not a method. We're certainly doing all we can, again, to train, change the culture through training, through example, and through great leaders. And so I hope it works.
Much of that hope will rest on the relationships that American advisors build in police station across Iraq. We are in Baghdad and will continue our reporting tomorrow as an American soldier explains what's going right and wrong with police training. You can find an online journal of our travels in Iraq at npr.org.